Welcome to What About Wealth? Making it, investing it, protecting it, leaving a legacy with your hosts, Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. In today's economy, preserving wealth has become more important than ever, especially when it comes to our future generations. Now, here is Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee.
Good morning. This is Rick Durfee.
And this is Rich Bloomfield.
We are here. Go ahead, Rich.
We're excited about today's show. We've got two guests on with us, Blair and Cindy Packard from Care for Life. And so we're going to be talking with them and about their organization today. I'm going to go ahead and introduce Cindy, and then Rick will introduce Blair, and then we'll get started with the show. One thing that I wanted to say before doing that is that one of the greatest things that we see in our work that we do together is the use of wealth to bless the less fortunate in the world. And the reason that we're having the Packards on today is because they exemplify this through their Care for Life organization that they started back in 2000. So we're thrilled to have them here because we want to discuss and point out many things, but one for sure is that how much of a difference even a small amount of money can make in the world. So we're hoping that our listeners are inspired today to make a difference in the world with their wealth, however meager that may be. Cindy Packard is the co-founder, as I mentioned, of Care for Life, along with her husband, Blair. She's a licensed midwife with a private practice in Gilbert, Arizona. Cindy and Blair have 7 children, 24 grandchildren, and she spent an extensive amount of time working in Mozambique, including a humanitarian mission in 2005 and a 3-year mission in Mozambique and Angola for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints with her husband from 2006 to 2009.
Now, I want to add that Cindy was the midwife for several of my children, and that's how we became acquainted and friends. And in introducing Blair, I want to say the best thing about Blair is that he's married to Cindy. I think he would probably agree with that.
That's true.
Blair is a great neighbor, wonderful friend. He's got multiple degrees from lots of universities. He's a licensed physical therapist and does a lot of volunteer work in here in the Valley of the Sun in Arizona. And he's been on the board of directors of the American Physical Therapists Association and the president of the U.S. Federation of State Boards of Physical Therapy. But again, I think some of the most exciting stuff he's done is his humanitarian service in Mozambique. He's been there on multiple mission endeavors. And served specifically as a mission president for the LDS Church in both Mozambique and Angola from 2006 to 2009. So, Blair and Cindy, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Thank you. Good morning, Rick and Rich.
Now, for our listeners' sake, so that you know, none of us can see each other, which is really interesting. But Blair and Cindy, give us kind of the bird's eye view. Tell us about Care for Life and what you do. What's your 30-second elevator speech on that?
Well, we go into entire villages. We work with about 10,000 people at a time, and we work with the poorest of the poor, and we have a program where in 30 months we help them turn their lives around and become self-reliant.
Now, that's you've said several things there that tweaked my interest, and I love to hear this. I know it's almost legendary of people going into countries like Mozambique and other African nations where they spend a lot of time and a lot of money, and then they leave, and the problem's just as bad as it was before they were there, maybe even worse. You mentioned you're there 30 months, and then you leave, and they're self-reliant. As we go through the program, I want you to talk about that, but tell us how you got started, what gave you the idea, and what are the beginnings?
Okay. I'm a midwife, and I had a friend who went to Mozambique in 1999, and she came home just distraught to tell me, you have to go and do something about the problems of maternal and infant mortality. And at the time, one in four children were dying under the age of five. It was just horrific. Mozambique had just come out of colonization, exploitation, many, many years of war, and was really the poorest country in the world at that time. And so it was one of those things that didn't make sense to me. I didn't have any background in doing anything like that. I didn't have any money to do it. But it was one of those things that I felt in my heart that was the right thing for me to do. And so basically we just put a ragtag team together of a few of us. I took my two teenage daughters, and we just went there to see if there was anything that we could do. And doors started opening, and one thing led to another.
So wait, you took your kids, two of your girls, and just flew to Mozambique.
That was it. I tried to, research, find out who was working there, and tried to get in touch with a few people, but I really couldn't make any connections. So finally, I had this very strong feeling that I should just go, and my husband was supportive, and we took a translator. They speak Portuguese, and took five young adults, and we just went over there. And to be honest, we didn't know how we were going to do it. Someone had given me advice. They said, go to the highest level of government that you can get into and tell them what resources you have. And so I thought, okay, I couldn't even talk to anyone before I left. I didn't know how that was going to happen. But, I think when you do these things, there's such a thing as divine intervention. When you feel you're supposed to do something, all kinds of things happen to make it work. And the second day in the country, we met a lady on the street whose cousin was the Minister of Health. And that night we were in her home talking to him. And the next morning we were meeting with the whole department of the Ministry of Health. And they knew I was a midwife and they needed help. And that, it just went from there.
Wow.
So that first trip that Cindy made, she came home and with all kinds of stories, all kinds of passion to go back and do something. I hadn't been on the trip, so I'm hearing all these stories. And she says, you got to come back and see. And I'm thinking, well, I guess I better, or this train's going to leave the station without me. And so 6 months later, Cindy and I went back and retraced some of the steps that she had covered and just saw with my own eyes what took place. We came back from that experience very touched. Knowing that we had to do something, not quite sure what we could do, but we came back and threw ourselves into researching how you start a nonprofit organization, talking to professionals, reading copious materials, books, online articles, and came back just committed and started the process of beginning a nonprofit.
One of the things that we learned that I think was really important, and you mentioned this, Rick, was when we started to research, we realized billions of dollars have been poured into Africa. I mean, just program after program after program. And in the long run, it's actually made things worse for the most part. It's created this dependent society of, well, what are you going to do to fix my problems, And even the government just looks to nonprofits to come in and do what they do. And so we realized at that time that we didn't want to do it that way. It didn't feel right to us. And yet everything that was out there was, go build a school and, finance it for the next 50 years. And the Mozambicans, the Africans, didn't own these projects. A lot of times they didn't even address the primary problem. It addressed what we thought was the problem, which was often the secondary problem. And so we wanted to do things differently, and I remember finding this book, and in this book there was this little motto, and it said, go to the people, live with them, love them, learn from them, work with them. Start with what they have, build on what they know, and in the end, the people will rejoice and say, we have done it ourselves. So that's kind of how we did it. We just went. We went with not a plan. We just went. We met people there who cared about their country, who wanted to talk to us and volunteer to help us, and we started just with volunteers in Mozambique. And gradually through experience and just seeing with our own eyes and learning, we developed the program.
The I was reviewing some of your material before the show today, and we have a kind of a theme for our show, and I noticed that you have for Care for Life. It's alleviate suffering, promote self-reliance, and instill hope. And so those are all things that I can hear coming through when you're talking here. We're going to take a break here, and then when we come back, we'll explore that a little bit more and deeper in some of these areas.
Great.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
How do you feel about the future? Tune in each week for Visionary Leader Extraordinary Life with host Kate Ebner. You can be a great leader by learning from the inspiring stories of amazing visionaries who are shaping our future. Everyone deserves to create their own vision, and Kate and her guests will share the tools that you need to make it happen. Make a weekly visit to the Voice America Business Channel for Visionary Leader Extraordinary Life every Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time. Be inspired. Become inspiring.
Do you need directions to solid financial future? If so, the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with a roadmap to making smart money decisions in every area of your personal finances. Join Jordan every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 3 p.m. Eastern, for the Money Answers Show on the Voice America Business Channel. Learn how and where to get the best deals on mortgages, cars, and insurance. Find out the best ways to save for college and retirement. Get out of debt, improve your credit rating, and save on your taxes. The Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with great tips on investment opportunities in real estate, stocks, annuities, and other investment vehicles. That's the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman on the Voice America Business Channel every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
If you are looking for both an inside and insightful look at what you're not seeing in media coverage of today's legal, business, and policy battles, tune into In the Court of Public Opinion with host Jim Haggerty. What happens in the public arena affects us all. Whether you're following the latest high-profile court case, corporate crisis, or are just interested in government and policy, be sure to tune in every Tuesday at 12 noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. The witnesses are ready and the jury seated. So join us for our next session in the Court of Public Opinion. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
Okay, we're here with our guests, Blair and Cindy Packer.
Welcome back, everyone.
Learning about their adventures in Mozambique, and I just struck me as we were listening towards the end there, you go to Mozambique, you don't have a clue who to talk to or what to do, but you have this idea that you should go live with and be with the people and learn from them. So tell us, I can visualize you going to a village and hanging out. Then what happened? How did you figure out what to do, and how did that develop in what you do today? So tell us about that.
Okay. Let me tell you a story. I was gathering information, just overwhelmed with what I saw, the level of poverty. I mean, it's unbelievable. If I can paint a picture, there's a woman living in what I could only call a straw doghouse. It's not even big enough to stand up in, and she's got a baby in there, and all she's got in there is a grass mat that she's woven and a pot that she's cooking something green on a little fire right outside that little doghouse. And that's the level of poverty we saw on that trip. It was overwhelming. I didn't even know where to start. And especially that we didn't have any money, and we really didn't know anybody who had any money to help us. And so at that point, I was asking someone in the village, well, you need everything. What do you need the most? What can I do? Can I bring pencils? You know, I didn't know. And he said, what we need most, I mean, he's sitting there with nothing. He says, what we need most is knowledge. And so at that point, I realized that education was going to be the key. And we started out by just teaching basic facts for life. It's healthcare facts that everybody in the world needs to know, like to treat your water, to use a latrine, to use a mosquito net, just the basics of what causes disease. And this was a big problem that they didn't understand. And so we started with that and then gradually added income generation literacy to the program that we had. We used to do have people come to one area where we were, and then we realized we could reach so many more people if we went out to the villages. And so it sort of evolved, but there was this missing piece to the puzzle, and that was when they are so extremely poor, you can teach them how to garden, but if they don't have seeds and a hoe and a watering can, they're not going to grow it, and they don't have any money at all to buy it. And so we came up with this idea where they could set goals. And when they set a goal, then they could earn something. And we call this program Family Preservation. And the Family Preservation Program, we go into a village and we tell them right up front, we're not here to give you anything. We're different than other NGOs. We're here to help you help yourself, to change your life. And we're only going to be here for a short time, 30 months, and then we leave. And there's a lot of pre-discussion that goes on because this is a very new concept in Africa that you don't just come in and unload your truck and drive off. And so what we do is it's a holistic approach. We cover 8 areas of emphasis that include education, health and hygiene, food security and nutrition, sanitation, income generation, home improvement, even psychosocial well-being and community participation. And they set goals in those 8 areas. And when they reach those goals, then they can earn something that generally has to do with what the goal is. In other words, for gardening, if they take the gardening class, which is several weeks, if they prepare their ground, if they put a natural fence around the garden that they've prepared, then they can earn seeds, a hoe, and a watering can. The reason we can exit in 30 months and not keep giving rewards is because then the reward becomes the garden that's growing and the nutrition that their family's getting and the income that they can make by selling the things in the garden. So that's why we're able to wean out quickly with the reward program. But it is an incentive to get them started and give them the essential things that they need.
So how did you figure that out?
That's a great question. We didn't necessarily figure it out. They figured it out. We brought in an intern who is a guy that named Joao Bueno. He'd just gone through kind of a midlife crisis where he went back to school and got a master's degree in international development. And we brought him on as an intern right at the time we were struggling with these concepts that Cindy has just explained. And so he sat down with our Mozambican team with this idea of a reward for goal achievement. And over a period of approximately 5 to 6 months, they worked out every aspect of what we now call the Family Preservation Program. And so it really was without a lot of input from, U.S. individuals or us, it was mostly them who put this program together that would fit their culture and their people.
And one of the things we wanted to do, the orphan population is huge in Africa. It's just a growing issue. There's 12 million orphans in Africa, in sub-Saharan Africa. And that number is just growing now to over the last years, it's just grown terribly. And the kids are just begging on the street. So we realized, you can give the kid, something on the street, or you can go back into the village and find their family and support that family and prevent orphans in the future. So we like to say we're in the orphan prevention business, basically. And we go back and strengthen the family. Everything that we do is focused on the family. A lot of programs, they just focus on the mother, but there's a father there that needs to step up and be the provider in this family. And so our program focuses on a whole family, how to preserve and strengthen the family so they can take care of their children. And families there are large and extended. And if you can strengthen that family, you're changing generations. And a lot of what we do is even goes into behavior change. We have an amazing amount of data that we track the indicators of what a family is doing when they first come in the program, where they are in 6 months, 12 months, and even 2 years after exit. But there's a lot of indicators that we don't even track, things like their attitude about caring for family members with HIV or just the dignity of self-reliance. And if I could just let Blair share a little bit about the statistics of what it's like before and after. You know, I wish we had pictures to show you, but to paint a picture, you walk into a village and it's really without hope. You don't see any eyes. It's like the lady that I mentioned in the straw doghouse. It's just no hope. Everyone's listless. They don't have a set place to go to the bathroom. Everything's just dirty. There's litter. They don't know. They don't have the knowledge, and they've lost the hope that anything's ever going to change.
There's a depth of poverty where people get to the point where they can't even help themselves, and they certainly don't think they can help somebody else. And that's kind of the genius behind how this program works. Cindy mentioned that we work with about 10,000 people at a time. We have 60 employees in Mozambique. And what we do is we divide their work up into different communities or villages. That 10,000 is probably divided up between 8 to 10 different villages or communities. When we come into a new community, we work with them. First of all, we determine if they want to do the program, that they will, you know, comply with the things we're going to teach and direct. And we organize the community into different, segments. And so we divide a community up into zones, first of all. A zone will have about 20 to 25 families. And within every zone, there's also a district of about 5 families. And these families will work very closely together to help one another in accomplishing different goals. And so our field officers and supervisors come in, and they elect their own leaders and volunteers at these different levels, the zone leaders, the zone level, and the district level. And we initially do a lot of teaching and instruction with our staff, but we're also at the same time instructing their staff, how they can help each other. And so over the process of this 30 to 32 months, we go from doing a lot of the teaching instructing to them doing all the teaching instructing and working with one another. And so Cindy also mentioned the 8 areas of focus. And within each of those areas are different indicators or targets or goals they can work on. And as they do that, they may pick 7 or 8 goals at a time. And we measure the initial level of compliance with these different areas. And then we measure them every 6 months until we exit a community. And then we continue to measure them and collect the data on 51 data points for a period of 5 years after we exit a community to make sure that what we've done is still making a difference. So let me give you some examples. I'll just pick a few. Let's take, for example, sleeping under mosquito nets. In communities where we have completed the program, these are communities that have already participated in all 32 months and they're exited. When we first went into a community, about 27% of the population was sleeping under mosquito net. When we exit, 96% were using mosquito nets. And even from anywhere from 6 months to 3 years later, that number has even gone up to where 98%, or 2 more percentage point increase, are using mosquito nets. So virtually everyone is using mosquito net in that population. When you look at drinking water, drinking treated water, this is a drastic one. When we go in, only 16% are using treated water. And so, you know, lots of conditions, are going to be caused by that, the healthcare issues. When we exit, 96% of the population is using treated drinking water. So it's phenomenal the kind of changes that we see and are sustained over the course of the program and for the years after the program.
So the question that comes to my mind, and I know it's all part of the program, but make this clear for us, is so where do they get the mosquito nets? How do they buy them? And how do they end up with clean water where they didn't have water before? If they're self-reliant, how are they generating the resources to do that?
Uh-huh. That's a great question. And that's really the key, is that they have to be able to have an income. So one of the goals is income generation. We teach them some basic skills, and they choose whatever it is they're going to do. Sometimes they do more than one thing. Let me tell you this again by a story. tell you the story of this young man. His name is Alberto. It was a child-led family. His mother died when he was 12. His father died when he was 14. And he was left to take care of his three siblings. So they really didn't have any shelter. They spent their day just trying to find a place to be and food to eat. And mostly it was done by begging or foraging, whatever they could find. We came into the village when Alberto was there, and he learned about the GOAL program. And we told him that there were classes that he could take to learn different things. And so he jumped into this with both hands and both feet. He learned how to make bricks. That's one of the classes that we teach. We use native materials, and they can earn a bag of cement to add to their bricks if they have a goal and they can earn that. That you can make bricks without that too. They're just a little stronger. So he learned the brick making business. And he set a goal to make 2,000 bricks just out of the mud there. And we gave him a form, we showed him how to make a form, and he made a form. He made these 2,000 bricks with his siblings. He made a house, earned the money for the cement, and now he has this wonderful house. He did the same thing with the gardening program, and he planted this wonderful garden, and that's what he's now using for income. He sells bricks, and he teaches people how to make ovens. That's another class. And so he has a brick making business, and his siblings do the garden primarily, and they sell this. All the kids are back in school. That's what they use now to buy the things that they need. They have an income enough to buy a uniform, to go to school, and to buy the necessities of life.
He's also now the community garden specialist, and so he's the one who teaches others how to do a garden and to earn money from the garden.
Wow. This is really exciting. We want to come back and talk more about this after we take a short break.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network. Are you looking for innovative ideas on how to achieve your financial dreams? Tune in to Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday afternoon at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Join certified financial planners Ken Smith and Ethan Broga to learn how you can obtain financial success. You'll be entertained while you discover techniques to alleviate your financial concerns. Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Voice America Business Network. The bottom line in business.
You are tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
So welcome back, everyone. We're thrilled to have Cindy and Blair Packard on today. And we've been talking about some very interesting things here. Even on break, we were discussing some of the things and what the future looks like for Care for Life. And I thought we could jump in there and let the Packards tell us about what they see in the future and what their goals are for the future.
Yeah, we are optimistic that poverty doesn't have to exist in the world. There really is a program that we have put together, and we're not saying we're the only program. We know there's millions out there that are doing good things in the world, but not a lot of people work with the extreme poor because they need so much. They need everything. They're not literate, and a lot of people like to go up kind of one level because it's so hard to work with the extreme poor. And yet, you know, almost half of the world is living in extreme poverty. So we want to share our program with the world any way that we can. And we've put it together in such a way that it's portable. It's replicable. We have manuals. It's all documented. We have programs that track it all. And we just want to share it with people. If there are people working in other parts of the world that would like to do what we're doing, we're putting together an academy in Mozambique. We have a learning center there, and we're putting together an academy where people can come to Mozambique. They can do a program anywhere from 3 months to 12 months to learn this in detail so that they could take it and implement it in their area and wherever they are. And it's not something that costs a lot of money. You know, your program's about finances, and a lot of people think, well, you know, if I had $1 million, I'd go do this. But we barely scraped together the cost of the airplane ticket to get over there, and we came home and we shared it with a few friends who liked the idea. And, you know, you don't have to have a lot of money to implement this program. You have to have the knowledge, and it's taken us, you know, 12 years to kind of package this all up in a way that we could share. That is our goal now, is to share it with others in other parts of Africa or in other parts of the world that are people are suffering in extreme poverty.
So you mentioned, and I know you've said this, but you're not doing this because you have millions and millions of dollars that you don't know what to do with and you're just giving them away. You're really not spending your own money. You're making things happen and sharing, I guess, the wealth of the knowledge and the life experience that you've accumulated.
And we have a broad group of supporters that do financially support Care for Life as well. And we think that we, you know, multiply their contribution and their efforts through the program that we have. Just to be real specific, you know, the basic cost of doing this is less than $50 a person per year. So for roughly $125, you're going to make a person and a family self-reliant for the rest of their life. Again, we're only there for 32 months with a program. They become completely self-reliant after that. And they can start to climb and to make far more life after we exit. So it's not a real expensive proposition. An entire community of 1,000 people, you basically, you know, fund that for about $60,000 a year to make this difference in people's lives.
Now, if you change one community like that, I mean, doesn't word get out? Do other communities clamor to get this?
They do. They do.
That's exactly what's happening. We have so many communities waiting in line to have the program, and we're only limited by financial ability to go to those villages. Like Blair said, we have 60 paid employees now in Mozambique. They're all Mozambicans. They're all wonderful people who want to help their country, and you know, we don't pay them a whole lot. We don't even have an office here in the U.S. Our overhead is slim to none over here because we're all volunteers. And the money that you donate to Care for Life goes to the villages to promote this. And we have villages that are in line and that are waiting and that we can't get to. And that's just in our area. We also have, when we exit a village, those villagers become teachers. They teach everyone that moves into their village and even sometimes their surrounding villages. You know, they want to know why your village looks so good and mine looks so bad. And so we, you know, we empower them to go on and teach others. And so it is spreading just that way as well, but not fast enough.
So Cindy and Blair, does the government in Mozambique, do they participate with you in any of this, or are you pretty much on your own with doing all of this? What is their involvement, if any?
We've had a couple of grants through the Mozambican government in the past that have helped us. Currently, we don't have a grant. Cindy mentioned the dependency oftentimes is built within governments in Africa on nonprofits. And it's really true. They really look at nonprofits to come in and help take care of their needs. But I think as we go forward, our basic plan is not to grow large as an organization. We have carefully documented the program, and we're now ready to share it with others. That would include governments. If a government a church, another nonprofit, individuals, universities wanted to come in and learn this program, we're happy to share this with them as long as they just participate in the educational training, maybe use some consulting so that we do get their programs up and running properly. But that's our intent. Our intent is to share at any level what we're doing, and hopefully it can expand like that. I want to mention just briefly that worldwide, there is kind of a model called the Millennium Development Goals, where the goals are to alleviate and really make an impact on poverty. I think it's by 2020. And Care for Life's Family Preservation Program meets or exceeds those goals in every aspect. And so I think part of this would be to show the effectiveness of this program to other organizations and say, well, we can use it to meet these Millennium Development Goals.
And I think we've actually taught the government, when they were pretty skeptical when we first came in, because like you mentioned, so many people come in, promise they're going to do something and leave. And then their approach was, just give people stuff. They just give out blankets and stuff like that. And when we told them we didn't want to participate in the World Food Program, they were giving us 6 tons of food a month. And we said, we don't want that because nobody's going to want to grow a garden if we give them 6 tons of food. And they were aghast at that, But we said, just watch. Come back in 3 months and look at our villages without giving them food and see what we've done. And they're changing the way they look at humanitarian aid as a result of this. We have one lady in the government there that brings everybody she can find out to our villages to show them this is a better way.
Because they're growing their own food instead of standing in line to get a handout.
Exactly. And they have hope and they have energy because of that. It isn't even just about financial things. It's about how they feel inside being on the dole as opposed to being self-reliant.
Now, I want to ask you a question about sustainability, because I've heard this criticism before, that if we go in and help these people not die, then we have the problem of too many people and they can't grow enough food or sustain themselves, so we're just going to make the problem worse and bigger, because now instead of dying young, they're just going to die old in poverty and squalor. So if we keep them from dying, are we making the problem better or worse?
When we first began working in the Beta area, that's an area that we were, central Mozambique, it was an area that had one of the highest AIDS concentrations in the world. In fact, 33%, one in three adults that you looked at was HIV positive. And you're losing whole generations of people with that kind of infection rate over time. And what we're doing here is creating stability in families, stability in health, stability economically, stability in education, all kinds of things that you and I look at and we take for granted. They don't have these opportunities to live and to be educated and to be healthy until they learn these type of things. And there's no way that life cannot be better for them when they make these kind of huge behavioral changes and gain this knowledge. And life is, you can see it. You can see it in their faces. You can see it in their communities. You can see it in their homes. From every aspect, life is far better for them. And, it's not a question of overpopulation in the least. There's lots of resources. I mean, Mozambique is a country that looks like the most fertile parts of California. They could feed half of Africa if they had the capacity, the infrastructure, a healthy population to do so. They could do it, and the knowledge to do so. They could do it.
So bring this home. What kind of effect has this had on you personally, on your children, on your perspective on the wealth that we enjoy here in America? How has it changed you?
It's changed us completely. I guess I could say this. You know all those stories that you see all the time of those starving children in Africa, and you read those magazine articles, those newspaper articles, and you see those shows on TV. And to be honest, Rick, before, I just turned them off. They made me so sad. I felt like there is absolutely no solution. There's a black hole over there and nobody can figure it out. And I just was sad and I didn't want to get involved because I thought, what could I do? There's nothing I can do. And now I know that's not true. There's something that we can do. And it's possible to help people get out of this kind of poverty. And now I have hope. Instead of just being sad and feeling like it's a hopeless situation, I know that it's possible to change people's lives. And now I read those stories and I think, wow, I can't wait to get there. I sure hope I can find somebody to tell about this program and pass it on. And it's changed our family completely. You know, a lot of our children have been involved. We have one daughter that's been over like 7 or 8 times. And it's changed the way we live life. It's changed the way we look at what's important and what's not. We adopted a child from Mozambique, and she's the light of our life. And we've learned that a lot of things that people think about Africa just aren't true. These people are amazing, and they have the capacity and the desire to learn. And when we go over there, you kind of go thinking, well, I'm going to go help. I'm going to share. I'm going to teach them stuff. And what you realize is you come away being the one that gained the most. If you get involved in this kind of work, you are the ones that are changed the most. You are the one that learns the most. We have so much we can learn from them.
I have a story as well. Cindy's told stories. Let me share a story. But let me preface it, first of all, by a news story. Just recently, the last couple of days, a story about this young man from Africa, from Mali or Somalia, who's a graduate student at Yale. And he talks about the fact that, you know, talent is out there. Talent is kind of universal, but opportunity is not. And he outlines the avenues that he's taken in his life and the opportunities that have been given to him to get an education, a graduate education at Yale. But I had a story on our first.
Hey Blair.
Yes.
I want to hear the story, and excited to hear the story. We need to take a break right now, and then when we come back, we can start with that story.
All right. Thank you.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Do you want to know what's really going on these days? Well, Capital Thinking takes you inside the worlds of policy, politics, law, and business. What happens in Washington, on Wall Street, and in our nation's legal system impacts your business every day. We're taking you on a behind-the-scenes tour of all of it. Each week, we bring you unfiltered conversation with a variety of influential policymakers, lawyers, and business leaders. I'm Kevin O'Neill, and I'm your host as Capital Thinking tours the halls of power. Join me for Capital Thinking on the Voice America Business Network each Thursday at noon Eastern and 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
Leadership is a vital skill set in today's competitive global economy. Being a leader is not enough. To succeed, you must optimize your performance and know how to imbue others in your organization with leadership skills. Practical, actionable leadership insights are the focus of Leadership Development News, hosted each Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, by Kathy Greenberg and Relly Nadler on the Voice America Business Channel. Doctors Greenberg and Nadler, who coach global leaders on how to be most effective, will share their insights and contacts. The path to leadership excellence begins here. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
And we're back. Right before the break, I had to interrupt Blair. He was telling us a story, and we're going to go right back to that, and then we'll go to some calls to action at the end of the show.
On one of our first extended trips into Mozambique, we were there for 3 months, and we had some college-age volunteers who were helping us remodel what we now call a learning center. And one day I came into the learning center, and here was one of our volunteers who was a college graduate math major. And he was sitting at a table tutoring a young man who was high school age, who lived in an orphanage for older kids. And they were dealing with algebra, college algebra. And I made the comment to our graduate student. I said, well, how can he possibly keep up with this? And he looked at me and said, you know, He's been with this book now for about a month, and there's probably not much I can teach him. He has mastered this completely to the point where I'm not teaching him anything at all. And that was one of those aha moments in my life where some of my prejudices and my perceptions just kind of passed. And so one of the things that I've learned is that, you know, we sometimes see people where what we're looking at is their limited opportunity, not their limited capacity. They have every capacity that we have to learn, to progress, to go forward, if they had the opportunities. So what Careful Life is doing is simply building a system where people have opportunities to go forward and learn and make those kind of advances in their life.
Wow. That's an amazing story. I just wanted to quickly share my daughter, Katie, went with Careful Life to Africa. I can't remember exactly how many years ago, but you know, when you talk about that, you're the one that comes away and you're the most changed. That's certainly been the case with her. She's never been the same since, and has wanted to be involved with healthcare and doing things that she was inspired to do while she was there. And just in a couple of weeks, she'll graduate as a nurse practitioner from the University of Virginia. And I know that, you know, this has always been this experience has been a defining experience for her whole life. So I can understand what you're saying. And I think it's something that all of us should be involved in, because, as you say, I think we'll be better because of it.
Now, Rich, we have an open invitation for families to come and participate like that. We do take college-age kids in the summer, but we also take family teams. We take business teams. Anybody that would like to go, we have a place there to stay. You can fly right in there, and you can work. We could tailor a team to a family. And, you know, maybe instead of going on a cruise with your family, you should think about going to Mozambique and spending a week out in the villages. And, you know, I don't think there's a better legacy that you could pass on to your family or your children. And if you can't do that, maybe you could come together and decide as a family, for this Christmas, we're going to sponsor a zone or sponsor a village. You know, it does change your life. It changes the life of people that are involved.
So where do we learn more?
We have a wonderful website, and we'd love it if everyone went there. We have videos, we have stories, we have lots more information there. It's www.careforlife.org, all spelled out, careforlife.org. And if you go there, you can find out things that you can do to get involved. You can find out how to donate. I will say $100 makes a huge difference over there. You can sponsor an individual, and you can even volunteer to help us. We are a small handful of people here in the U.S. trying to get this done. We're from all over, from California to New York, so it doesn't matter where you live. We have committees that we need help with, and we'd love to have you check out the website and find out what feels good for you to get involved with this great work.
So you've mentioned money, committees, going there. Are there other specific things that an individual or a family could do?
You could share this message with other people. We would love to come and talk. If you want to gather a group of people together, we'll have somebody come and share the message with that group. And that's something that we really like to do. We do a lot of speaking, and it can be as small as your own family or as big as your company. But we'd love to come and share our message. Like I said, we're just trying to get this word out. There is a program to help people that live in extreme poverty change their lives and become self-reliant forever, for generations after that, for a relatively small amount of money and in a short period of time. And we just hope people can help us share this message with others in the world.
Rick, I wanted to, you know, ever since I met you, I've known that your real passion was not being an attorney. It was really doing charitable work and promoting it, whether that's in Scouts or other things. So you started this public nonprofit probably more than a decade ago, and asked me to participate at the beginning. And what you do in this nonprofit is you facilitate the accumulation of funds to help organizations such as Care for Life. So tell us how that all works and, you know, the mechanics of that so that maybe our listeners can use what you do and the tax advantages of what you do to promote organizations like Care for Life.
Sure. Well, it used to be that to have a quote-unquote family foundation, frankly, took millions and millions of dollars. If you didn't just have a boatload of money, you couldn't even think about it. And our organization, Legacy Global Foundation, and there are others that do similar things, makes it possible for any family with on any budget from $10 to create a fund that they can contribute to, multiple family members can contribute to, and build up a small or a large endowment that then they can use to fund projects like Care for Life. And so a family that might say, well, gee, we're not wealthy, we don't have a lot of money, that's okay. They can create a fund. They can, and we've had families. In fact, I'll share. There's a family here in our local community that are just working people. They live paycheck to paycheck, but they got excited about a mission and went out and did car washes and community projects, and they raised $600,000. That now that fund is an endowment that supports their particular it's a medical research project that is helping people with a particular medical issue. But similar here, if people got excited and maybe they can't go, maybe they can't get on a plane and go spend weeks in Mozambique, but they can send their $100 or they could create a fund or contribute to other people's funds that are supporting causes like Care for Life. The Legacy Global Foundation approach has been to I guess democratize the family foundation so anybody can have one. But what really drives it at the end of the day is not the fact that we have a family that has $800 that they've saved up in a charitable fund. It's the fact that they can say, gee, let's give our part of our money or all of our money or the income from our little fund, let's give that to Care for Life or other organizations like that to make a change and a difference. And, you know, I heard a family, in fact, it's a very wealthy family that has a very large charitable foundation, and their family motto is we never send money, we take money. And if they give money to an organization, they volunteer and work in it. And I guess that's what I would like to encourage people to do with Care for Life. Yes, Blair and Cindy, I'm sure you'll take the check, but wouldn't you rather have the check in the hand of a volunteer?
Yes, we don't just want your money, we want your heart. And I think that that's not hard to do. We have DVDs. If anybody goes online, we can send them a DVD. And once you watch that, you will want to do that. You won't just say, oh, I don't just want to send you a check. I want to help in some other way and get your family involved. We have a lot of different ways that families can get involved and things that you can do. We have packets that are available to help you. And it'll be the best investment that you can give to your children.
Well, thank you both for being here with us today. This has been very enlightening. I'm very excited about it. And, you know, maybe with being on the show, if you didn't affect anyone else besides Rick and I, we'll likely be raising our hand and doing something. So thank you again. And we appreciate you participating. And we encourage our listeners to go to www.careforlife.org. And I've been on the website. It's great. And it can get you started in making a positive change in your life. Thanks again for all of you being here.
Thank you, Rick and Rich. And thank you to your listeners as well. We appreciate being with you.
Thanks so much for having us.
We promised that we would share with you how your wealth can make a difference in your own life and in the world, and we hope this program has given you some perspective on that. Thank you all.
Thank you for listening to What About Wealth with hosts Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. Please join us again for another edition next Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Until then, have a profitable week.